to be a lot easier.
I didn't know what step to take next.
I was transitioning from the military.
I was a vehicle gunner.
An avionics specialist.
I missed my unit, my family.
Playing with my daughter, I'd felt like a stranger.
I didn't have a clear sense of what to do next.
And then I thought, if I'm going through this, other veterans have gone through it too, right?
So I reached out, and I saw that I wasn't alone.
Go to maketheconnection.net to learn how other veterans have overcome the challenges of transitioning out of the military.
Sometimes you have to go away to get away to relax. Enjoy an affordable staycation experience at Wind River Resort and Casino. Standard rooms only $89 a night, Sunday through Thursday. Call or book online now. 1-800-280-UWIN or windriver.com. Offering mobile check-in and check-out. Valid through March 20th. Must have a River Club card. Some restrictions apply. Use promo code WINTER21. Join us for a safe and comfortable stay at Wind River Resort and Casino.
What is happening in the state of Jefferson? To find out, listen to the Jefferson State of Mind program Sunday mornings at 9 a.m. on KCNR with your hosts, Wayne Carpenter and Terry Raposa. To catch up on past broadcasts or to listen anytime, go to KCNR1460.com and click on the archives link.
ACA, come out and play. Have you seen the bill we all have to pay? The time has come for 51 in a Jefferson State of Mind.
Hi, this is Judy Maxwell. Life can happen in an instant. Sometimes you plan for it, like retirement or taking care of your family. Sometimes it's a surprise, like a winter storm with home or property damage. Sometimes it may be an unexpected accident or illness or even a premature death. Whatever life throws at you, you'll wish you had gotten the right insurance when you had the chance. That's where Maxwell Insurance can help. For more than a quarter century, we've been serving the North State because it's our home, too. Give us a call at 221-0441 to let us help you review your policies and prepare you for whatever your future holds. Maxwell Insurance, 1378 Hilltop Drive, 221-0441.
At Shasta Regional Medical Group, we're focused on the health matters that matter to you, like having a primary care doctor you trust. Our physicians put patients first. They take the time to listen to your needs and concerns, and they provide the information you need to make good decisions about your own health. At Shasta Regional Medical Group, you have an integrated network of caregivers and specialists working to serve you in a compassionate, patient-centered environment. We're conveniently located right across the street from Shasta Regional Medical Center. To make an appointment, call Shasta Regional Medical Group today at 605-4260 or visit us online at ShastaRegionalMedicalGroup.com. Shasta Regional Medical Group. Your primary care is our primary concern.
Remodeled kitchen, bathroom, or backyard patio? There's a lot of choices, but only one leader, Estate Granite.
Mike Huber has such a professional attitude and a can-do work ethic that makes him a joy to work with. Mike and his crew worked to have our new kitchen finished in 5 days. We came back to a true work of art.
Hi, this is Brian Salato, broker and co-owner of The Real Estate Group. In today's competitive market, I think what's important is that the house is dialed in and turnkey. And what's important is that the kitchen has been renovated, the bathrooms have been renovated, granite, beautiful cabinetry. Those things make a significant difference.
Mike at Estate Granite has an eye for detail, an attention to perfection, and a quality build crew that are masters of their craft. Mike was there from start to finish.
Hi, this is Mike from Estate Granite. I know how important quality to a homeowner is, so give me a call at 241-STONE or come by our showroom at 4900 Mountain Lakes Boulevard or visit us at EstateGranite.com.
Every Monday from 6 to 8 p.m., join us at Radio Wasteland, your local guide to the unexplained and the unknown. Each week, we cover all things unexplained, from the moving stars in the sky to the things that go bump in the night. Visit us as we explore these topics and more as our in-studio team digs deeper with featured guests and listener call-ins. Mondays are rough, but now your overworked brain has a chance for some sweet relief with Radio Wasteland.
Radio Wasteland, Mondays at 6 on KCNR.
Hi, this is Mark from Haven Humane Society. It has been a challenging couple of years, and through it all, our amazing team has continued to save lives. We have so many fantastic animals that are looking for their forever homes, and with adoption fees so low, now is the time to add to your family. With puppies, kittens, dogs, cats, and so many more, we have the perfect addition. Come join our team as a volunteer and help in an area that works for you. Walking dogs, socializing cats, helping our veterinary hospital, or folding laundry. We have many opportunities and welcome all volunteers. For more information, please visit our website at havenhumane.org or follow us on Facebook. On behalf of the entire Haven team, thank you for all of your continued support as together we get closer every day to a North State with no more homeless pets.
KCNR, 96.5 FM, AM 1460, and online at am1460.com. Don't miss Free Fire Radio weekday mornings from 7 a.m. to 9 a.m. with Carl and Linda Bott. From 9 to noon, be informed and laugh along with Armstrong and Getty, the conscience of the nation. From noon to 3, find your financial peace with Dave Ramsey. From 3 to 6, don't miss constitutional expert Mark Levin. Monday through Thursday night, starting at 6 p.m., we have local shows featuring everything from the paranormal to riding routes, pop culture, and unsung heroes in the North State. From 7 to 10, tune into Ben Shapiro with an expanded program that brings the issues of the day to your radio. KCNR also has an incredible weekend lineup, including The Plotline, Jefferson State of Mind, Sovereign Minds, and We the People on KCNR 96.5 FM, AM 1460, and online at kcnr1460.com.
For over 50 years, House of Realty has provided experienced and effective advice to its real estate clients. Experts in residential, commercial, and investment property, we have the knowledge and tools to assist you with all of your real estate needs. Family owned and operated since 1965, we have been an active part of the Shasta County community for generations. Please call House of Realty today at 241-8300, a reputation for excellence since 1965.
Did the Redding summer heat put a toll on your vehicle? Is your paint faded, peeling, or even scratched up? It'll get worse faster than you think. You may think it's way too expensive to have painted. Well, think again. You can bring it to Maaco here in Redding and get a professional paint job and save big with their $4.99 special. Maaco also has interest-free loans for up to a year OAC. Maaco, America's Body Shop, 3045 Crossroads Drive. Uh-oh. Better call Maaco, 226-0992. Have you been involved in a minor accident and find it's not big enough to go through your insurance company? Bring it to Maaco and get it fixed at a fraction of the cost. Remember, it's your choice where you go to have your vehicle repaired. Call Maaco for uncompromised quality, quick turnaround times, and all work backed by the National Maaco Warranty. Maaco, America's Body Shop. Stop in at 3045 Crossroads Drive or call 226-0992. Uh-oh. Better call Maaco, 226-0992.
Slow down. Hi, this is Dr. Trudy Pratt. My chiropractic and nutrition practice in downtown Redding has been helping people feel better for over 20 years. We pride ourselves in really listening to our patients and then tailoring a program of nutrition, chiropractic care, massage, and exercise that's just right for you. The results can be dramatic. Call 244-7873. That's 244-7873. Thank you.
Pulse Urgent Care at 100 East Cypress Avenue would like to thank you for your support during 2020. Pulse is happy to announce they are reopening their urgent care services and are accepting patients by appointment only between 10 a.m. and 5 p.m. on weekdays and 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. on Saturdays. Pulse follows public health guidelines. Masks are required along with social distancing. Please call ahead at 530-722-1111 for a screening, appointment, and further information.
This Hawaiian mini vacation is brought to your radio by Maui Bob's Office Cleaning. So what does professional office cleaning have to do with relaxing in a tropical paradise? Frankly, nothing. But Maui Bob and the crew want to remind you to be sure to take the time for what's important in this workaday world. Family, friends, and yes, even yourself. And if their professional office cleaning services can help you make that time, give them a call at 221-5868. This Hawaiian mini vacation was brought to your radio by Maui Bob's Office Cleaning, 221-5868.
Anyone can be tested for COVID-19, and same-day appointments are often available. Average turnaround time is between 2 and 3 days. Testing is critical to help contain the spread of COVID-19. It is vital to know if a person has the virus so they can remain isolated until they're no longer contagious. This helps keep case numbers low. We need our case rate and positivity rates to drop so we can move into a less restrictive tier. And testing is a way we can all help with that. You can make an appointment at lhi.care/COVID testing.
Hi, this is Dr. Patricia Bay, and my radio show, Therapy in a Nutshell, which airs on Saturdays at 11 a.m. on KCNR, 1460 a.m., or 96.5 FM, is a great show for you to listen to and learn how to effectively change your life. We talk about issues such as communication and trust, couples issues, and many more. Also, you can listen to the radio show on my podcast through the Anchor app, which is free and safe. Or you can tune into the iTunes or Spotify podcast and listen to it there. It's a nice show that'll help you throughout the day and throughout your life. So join me for Therapy in a Nutshell, Saturdays, 11 a.m. at KCNR Radio. This is Dr. Patricia Bay, trying to heal the world 1 hour at a time.
You get me every time.
Why wait for summer? Gear up for some fun right here in our own backyard and head down to Wind River Resort and Casino to play our
Gear Up 2021 Swag to Win promotion.
Drawings Thursdays at 6, 7, 8, and 9 p.m. All winners receive bonus entries into the final drawings on February 25th.
Two motorcycles and a Can-Am quad.
And March 25th, a Yamaha ski boat.
From Redding, Yamaha Ski-Doo.
Join us for a safe, comfortable, and fun gaming experience at Wind River Resort and Casino. More drawings, more winners, more fun.
WindRiver.com.
Hi, I'm Sue Blake with Powerhouse Solar. Solar energy not only makes financial sense, but right now you can go solar for zero money down. And you may qualify to get the 26% federal tax credit. At Powerhouse Solar, we are an elite dealer for SunPower, and we install the most cost-effective and highest efficiency panels. A lot of people don't realize they have options now. You can get the SunPower SunVault battery and solar with financing. So keeping the lights on when the grid goes down is easier than ever. And the entire system is backed by their 25-year warranty. Powerhouse Solar can design a system for your specific needs. Call Powerhouse Solar today at 275-5600 or visit us on the web at powerhousesolar.com. Again, call Powerhouse Solar at 275-5600 or visit us online at powerhousesolar.com.
Hi, I'm Liz Ponce. We at Lassen Canyon Nursery love to support the Shasta County Farm Bureau, Shasta District Fair, and the Haven Humane Society, just to name a few nonprofits that are dear to our hearts. We are proud to live in a community that celebrates unsung heroes who give back, and we invite you to give where your heart is to help build a stronger community together. Please remember to visit Lassen Canyon Nursery before you plant your strawberry patch this spring.
Yeah, we'll be counting. Star.
Join Aaron Ryan and Bill Cundiff for We the People Radio every Sunday from noon until 2. Our expert guests will give you the whole story rather than a bunch of sound bites. Our commercial-free archives are always available at wethepeopleradio.us.
Sponsored in part by Pape Machinery, located at 3119 Twinview Boulevard, for all your local John Deere Ag and Turf products. Join us every Sunday from noon until 2, wethepeopleradio.us.
What shall we do about them?
Hi, this is Judy Maxwell. Life can happen in an instant. Sometimes you plan for it, like retirement or taking care of your family. Sometimes it's a surprise, like a winter storm with home or property damage. Sometimes it may be an unexpected accident or illness or even a premature death. Whatever life throws at you, you'll wish you had gotten the right insurance when you had the chance. That's where Maxwell Insurance can help. For more than a quarter century, we've been serving the North State because it's our home, too. Give us a call at 221-0441 to let us help you review your policies and prepare you for whatever your future holds. Maxwell Insurance, 1378 Hilltop Drive, 221-0441.
Some things in life you can just rely on, like the comfy fit of a favorite pair of jeans and the tried and true performance of a new home comfort system from Rood. So here's to reliability, built into everything we do. Rely on Rood.
Get reliable comfort when the weather turns cold with a new heating system installed by the local pros at Alliance Heating and Air. Call Alliance Heating and Air today at 530-221-2642.
Then Goliath, a Philistine champion from Gath, came out of the Philistine ranks to face the forces of Israel. He was over 9 feet tall. He wore a bronze helmet, and his bronze coat of mail weighed 125 pounds. 1 Samuel chapter 17.
You're listening to Writing Roots, brought to you by Aspen House Publishing.
Welcome to Writing Roots. I'm Lee Hull.
And I'm Lee Esses. And today we are talking about basically just people, but magically bigger people.
That would be the giants. Now, we're not talking about Andre the Giant, giants, not people who are just incredibly tall. We are talking about actual mythical creatures, legends, tales of races of tall people.
Across the world, a lot of cultures show tall people as powerful people. I believe there are two different Shinto emperors who are reported to have been more than 10 feet tall. These huge giant people, literally very tall, makes them very powerful to see. So at first sight, if your hero is encountering a giant, they can be very intimidated without even talking to or encountering physically.
So when we're talking about these mythical giants, the biggest thing about them in most legends is that they're basically people, but big. They are sometimes slower, less intelligent, but always strong.
And I've found across my different studies of giants around the world, cannibalism is something that we see a lot of, or at least eating humans in some way. You know, grind your bones for bread kind of a mantra. We see that in a couple of different giant stories around the world.
I have a hard time siding with Jack on the Jack and the Beanstalk story. What would you do if somebody invaded your house and stole your stuff?
Probably exactly the same thing.
Maybe not eat them, but, you know.
Maybe smush them.
Yes. So let's get into some examples of giant or large, intimidating, strong creatures. Of course, you have your trolls and your ogres and your orcs.
And the Urukai, which are important.
Urukai!
A lot of the references to giants are an alternate race, similar to elves and dwarves, where they are human-like, but not. They aren't exactly gods. They aren't demonic in any way. They're mostly just a different kind of people.
In Norse mythology, you have the Jotuns.
And to be clear, the Avengers mythology as well.
Of course, the frost giants from Jotunheim are very based on this race of giants in Norse mythology.
There was a carving that was dated to about the 10th century AD of, I'm not going to try to pronounce her name because I'm going to butcher it, but one of the Jotun riding a dog like a horse, might have been a wolf, and she had like reins on it, but the reins were made of snakes. It was a very interesting depiction of, because most of the time when we see giants, we don't see them using tools in that kind of a sophisticated way. It's mostly like a club and smash Harry Potter in the bathroom.
If you want to look that up, I believe the pronunciation is Hyrokin. It's Hyrokkin.
And of course, heading south to the Middle East, the Judeo-Christian history, we have the Philistines, which our opener was referencing, these gigantic warrior-type people.
Even if you aren't super familiar with the Judeo-Christian beliefs, you likely have heard the term Goliath. You've heard that and know that it references a giant, a huge human that is not easily defeated. So if we want to go down under to Australia, there is an oral tradition of a giant known as Crooked Mick.
If you're listening from the U.S., you probably know who Paul Bunyan is. Crooked Mick is like Paul Bunyan, but cooler. Not only does he like chop down stuff and shear sheep and such, but he makes great pies, apparently.
Not only are his pies good, but they are light, so light that a gust of wind can carry them away. And not only are pies getting carried away, if he kicks a crocodile, he can send it to the moon. Sorry, I'm having a really hard time keeping a straight face during this. I love this, and it's just so much fun that you've just got this, like, Australian bushman that's going out there kicking crocodiles and baking pies.
And generally doing everything that, you know, humans do, but way cooler. So you want to look that one up? That's Crooked Mick. And that's more legend than, like, people believed he actually existed. I mean, obviously, spurned from somewhere.
Again, much like Paul Bunyan.
Yeah.
And then, of course, you have a giant that is super familiar because of its prominence in Greek and Roman tradition, and that's the Cyclops.
He's also familiar because he's the dude with one eye. Which is interesting because most of the depictions I see of the Cyclops, he has the holes in the face in a normal where humans would have eyes, but they're just sort of skinned over, and then he has a third eye at the top of the center of the forehead. I always thought that was weird. It wasn't like they were like merged, you know?
I'm just picturing the Cyclops and Hercules, the Disney animated version. Where it's just, like, one big eye that's, like, half his face in the middle of his forehead. He has a very tall forehead as a result.
Most of the ones we've talked about so far are enemies of humans in some way. They're hunting them, they're smashing rocks and trying to kill the normal everyman.
Except for Crooked Mick, he's saving them from the crocodiles.
Okay, that's fair. I am talking about the Gentile, I believe it's pronounced. These are a race of giants found in the northern parts of Spain, close to where it meets France in that little bay there. They existed and they basically just hung out with the humans, and they were really known for their ability to throw rocks, and that's how a bunch of little islands off the coast were formed. But they were said to have lived alongside the Basque people at one point.
They were also said to have invented metallurgy, the saw, and grew the first wheat, and then taught the humans how to farm.
Most of them disappeared when the comet flew across the sky around the same time that Christ was born. That was sort of a harbinger for them to go, okay, it's bedtime, and they basically just went and lived under a mountain.
There was one that was said to have remained, known as Olentzero. O-L-E-N-T-Z-E-R-O, and he's said to appear at Christmas and is reproduced as a straw doll.
And of a lot of the giants we find, these ones are furry, they're hairier, until we get into more modern mythology and cryptozoology.
Fun cryptozoology. If we want to go a little coastal islander, in Fijian mythology, there is a giant who is so large that his teeth looked like they were burning logs. And that is why his name is Flaming Teeth.
Very original. So he basically tortured the humans in the village for so long that a bunch of warriors went, lured him under a big rock, and then pushed it over on him. He died, and his teeth were brought back to the village, which brought fire to the humans.
Fascinating.
We all have some sort of this is how humans got fire story, I think.
And it's never, hey, we boofed two rocks together and went, ooh, look, fire. And then if we go to Eastern Asian cultures and mythologies, the Hindu and Buddhist cultures have the Rakshasas, and they were depicted as shape-shifting, fierce-looking, enormous creatures with two fangs that protruded from the top of their mouth.
They have a lot of similarities between them and the modern Bram Stoker version of Dracula, of a lot of the vampire mythology.
Oh.
The shape-shifting, the eating people, especially their blood. needing to be invited into a building. These are all Rakshasa tropes that also appear with vampires, which we'll talk about in 3 episodes.
Yes.
These ones are a little strange because I didn't necessarily want to put shapeshifters in with giants because giants are naturally large creatures. And these ones can appear humanoid, but they are described as giant, larger than, scarier than humans. And with a lot more magical abilities than most giants we're going to see. And again, eating people is a thing.
So let's look into the literature and references to giants in fiction as we know it today in modern ages.
Of course, from Jonathan Swift's Gulliver's Travels, we have the Brobdingnag, which is a giant, and opposite the Lilliputians, which are the tiny people we talked about a couple episodes ago.
And Gulliver's like the normal-sized person in the middle?
Yep.
Okay. It has been a very long time since I've watched a movie that relates to that, and I've never read the book.
Yeah, it's been a while since I read the book. I didn't really follow most of it. I think I was a little too young for that. But if you're younger and you're looking for it, Roald Dahl has the BFG.
Big Friendly Giant. One of my favorites is actually Fezzik from The Princess Bride, portrayed by Andre the Giant. Absolutely love him. So great. And then the classic example, the Cyclops from Odyssey.
And the last one I just want to touch on, because I think this is how most people are familiar with giants and trolls and half-giants and such, is Harry Potter. We see trolls in the first book, and then one of the closest friends of the main characters is half-giant. They make fun of giant-type people a couple of different times. You know, just point and grunt. It's not that hard to talk their language.
Yeah, and in Harry Potter, the half-giants are especially considered, looked down on as lesser beings because of their mixed race.
So if I'm being plagued by a giant, how do I take it down?
Just make them fall over.
Okay. Crushing under their own weight. We see this a couple of different ways. We see that, of course, in Mickey Mouse had some of that. And I think the most classic version is Jack and the Beanstalk.
When he makes the giant fall off the beanstalk, chops it down while the giant's climbing down. Again, Jack invaded his house. What else was he supposed to do?
She's not going to let this die.
I'm not. Another thing when it comes to giants is the eyes tend to be vulnerable, especially with your cyclopses. The eyes and the face in general.
And I believe that's how the hero actually defeated the Cyclops, was he drove a spear or a lance into the Cyclops' eye. And then the Cyclops ran around going, "Nobody stabbed me in the eye," because he had convinced the Cyclops that his name was Nobody.
And in general, you deal with a giant the same way you would deal with a human. They're stronger, they're bigger, but they have the same kind of vulnerabilities. Their anatomy is generally the same. But they may be a little bit more invulnerable to magic.
Of course, you could go with the Princess Bride logic and the Fijian logic.
The moment his head is in view, hit it with a rock!
Seem to work for them. They have fire. And in general, most of the time you're going to see your heroes be smarter and more agile than your giants. This goes back to your David and Goliath story of, okay, I have a power behind me that you can't take down, so I'm smarter, I'm faster, I'm going to whack you in the head with a rock. Even though I am smaller, I can still beat you.
D&D stats, they have better dexterity.
Yep.
I hope this information has helped you, given a few ideas about introducing a giant character or giant race into your stories. You can play with it. You can have fun with it. Remember, these are mythologies. These are malleable creatures that you can use and play with and do as you will.
And these are an easy one, I think, to slip in because it's not like the Chimera, which we'll talk about next episode, where you have to describe this element and that element and they're going to shoot fireballs and whatever at you because of the specifics of this particular monster. Basically, everyone in your audience goes, "Giant, right. I have an image of that in my head. I don't need a 3-page description in order to follow the plot."
So go out, create, have fun, put giants into your story, and always
write selfishly.
If you have a question or comment for our hosts or a topic you'd like us to cover, send us an email at writingroots@aspenhousepublishing.com or find us on Facebook by searching for Aspen House Publishing.
Magic happens between the notes. Linda Bott.
You're listening to Writing Roots, brought to you by Aspen House Publishing.
Welcome to Writing Roots. I'm Lee Hull.
And I'm Lee Esses.
And joining us today is Linda Bott. Welcome. Thank you for joining us.
Hi, guys.
So we wanted to give you, our listeners, an idea of what it's like to be on stage, to be performing in front of a bunch of different people. So I dragged Linda Bott in because she's done this since you were a kid, right?
Yes. I professionally started working at 15.
Wow.
So I could say that's when I first started getting paid. But I have been singing, you know, basically growing up in the country where you've got horses and trees and the creativity of what it is to have imaginary friends and audiences. And, you know, I was the most famous person living in the country.
Yeah. Wow.
So, tell us about how you got your start. What exactly is it that you do?
I was basically just naturally, I think, gifted in the fact that I have a good ear and that my parents belong to Capitol Records. And one of the albums was Barbra Streisand. My brother to this day can't stand listening to anything Barbra Streisand because I emulated every single intonation and tone and breath. And so she basically was my voice teacher. And I learned how to hold my breath and have these big tones. And so that's what I do, is I sing. And then down the road, you know, that meant jingles, that meant recording, that meant, okay, do you want to be in this show? You have to learn these lines. Okay, can you dance? So I kind of did the acting, singing, and dancing and did some stage plays and was in a couple theatrical productions in high school and doing stuff like that.
I think the first time I met you was on the local stage here. I was working behind the scenes and helping get set pieces up and on. And it was a Christmas show.
Are you talking Martinis with Santa?
Yes.
I wrote that show.
Nice.
And produced that show. So that was a really big undertaking for me because I had written a song with one of my Nashville buddies named Cam King, and we wrote the song Martinis with Santa. And I, okay, now what am I going to do with this song? I recorded it a few times in different albums that I have produced and actually released. Besides trying to fill the seats, making sure the seats were filled, it was just a glorious experience.
So you are a stage performer, you are a singer. A lot of people have a very specific image in mind when they think of someone who's a performing artist. They think about actors, actresses, the glamour, the flashing cameras. They think about Broadway and all of the
jazz hands?
Jazz hands.
Literal jazz hands.
I don't know. So that's interesting because I think we all see the world through our own personal lens. Mm-hmm. So I would say that, first of all, it's a craft. There's a lot of grunt work involved in what it is. People just think you just roll out of bed and you have no idea the grunt work that goes into performing and what it is to, it's a lot of energy to put on high heels and put on clothes. And when you're hungry, you'll take any job. I used to say to my agent, just give me the Ramada Inn, I'll take a piano bar for $30. And that's the truth.
So if you could embed an idea into our audience's mind of what you do, what would it be?
I connect with people. I try to please people. It's an energy for me to feed people, but it also feeds me. So I feel like when I feed them, they feed me. It's a cycle. It's an energy circle.
What kind of mindset do you need to have to do what you do?
Well, I would say a lot of entertainers are very insecure. They need to have the acknowledgement, but ultimately the redemption. There's like a, oh yeah, you think because I'm tall and I'm blonde, I can't belt out a note, I don't have a brain. That has always been great for me to go like, as soon as you open your mouth, people are like, what? So what does it take? It takes a lot of chutzpah. It takes a lot of going through doors when people say, no, you can't do that. Well, watch me. You know, again, I heard another interview recently of Kelly Clarkson that said, you tell me no, and I'm going to show you how good I can do it. You know, you have to believe in yourself because there's constant people who are going to tear you down and say things, or, you know, you may be thinking you're saying the word pink and somebody says, look at how she says the word pink. I mean, that's such a weird analogy, but it's true. Does that make sense? So you have to develop thick skin because you're told 9 no's for 1 yes, no matter how good you are.
So think of your very first live performance to your very last live performance. What is the difference between how you feel before stepping on that stage?
When I think about my first really live performance, that would have been like in 7th grade with a jazz band and being body conscious, not sure of my energy, not sure of myself. And now at this age, I'm just, hey, you know what? I've got 3 different dress sizes in my closet, and I'm going to be who I am today in this moment. And I don't know what's going to come out. I'm prepared. But, you know, I remember this time like 4 years ago in the same place I was supposed to be performing, and they canceled the outside performance and put me upstairs. Talk about pulling out all of my shtick. Because I was inside now in a very small room. So, yeah, I was upstairs, and I remember it was summer like this. The fires had been raging. I said to the people putting on this event, do you really want people to sit outside in the smoke? That was just really an interesting night. It was fun, but, boy, I had to do some sing-alongs. And I don't know, about this stage of my life, I'm not really interested in sing-alongs. It felt like we were going to do the Hokey Pokey next.
So what is it like backstage?
There's a variety of different elements to backstage. Backstage could even be a coat closet, because trust me, I have oftentimes had my dressing room be a coat closet where I brought my own light and my own mirror, just some place to change costumes. And to having the real backstage, like in Las Vegas, where you do have the chaotic dressing room, fresh flowers on the table, a piano, where you do your scales before you hit the stage, or if you're with a group, you're harmonizing so you can pitch in before you hit the stage. So it's a variety of different things. Now, like this jazz gig coming up, it's going to be outside. So my stage will be the car before I get out there and say, okay, I'm ready, guys. Let me schlep. When am I going to schlep the microphone and the PA system? Tell me what I need to do. You can't have an ego when it comes to that. You just got to pull up your big girl panties and you get out there and let it rip.
Is there anyone in particular that you think has really changed the industry of performance?
Well, recently I saw Lady Gaga, and it rocked my world. Her audience had gay, straight, grandmas, every color of the rainbow, every generation, and everybody partied. And I love that. I really love that. I mean, Cher does that too. People who I think really changed a lot of genre bending are people like Dolly Parton. My former drummer in Nashville toured with her, so I got a chance to go backstage and meet her. And she was so real. I was like, I'm taking your time. I don't want to take this picture. And she goes, come back here, honey. You didn't get a good picture. So I took another picture, and I was thinking, oh, my gosh. And she was as real as the day comes. I don't think that woman has a fake bone in her body. So she's very prolific. And my drummer, Chuck, who's then her drummer and everybody else's drummer, had said that when you go on the road with her, expect a phone call at 2 or 3 or 4 o'clock in the morning, and she's going to be talking, what do you think about this line? And she's constantly writing. And so I think that she's been somebody who really inspired me as far as how long she's been around, and she's covered every genre and written books on top of it.
Do you have any final advice for an author who wants to write a performer in their book?
I would think about the words that I had said earlier that would be self-image, insecure, knowing it, growing it, ego. Yeah. Also going through your fears and developing more of the character as far as finding their apex or their zenith.
Is there any industry lingo that you can kind of define for them so they can use it for their character?
Wardrobe malfunction. Go on with the show, no matter what. Staying in pitch even when the band is playing in the wrong key. Not letting the hecklers make a joke with them, but don't let them disrupt you. Because there's always going to be somebody or something behind you on stage falling. Just malfunctions or mistakes. And you must go on with the show. If I were to mentor somebody or teach them, is that just remember that the magic happens between the beats. It happens between the notes. So many times before even going into a song with the intro, this is what I love about jazz and interpretation, is that I can take my time. And I can look at the players and say, I'm not ready yet. And they know if they read my body, we're going to go around one more time, or you're going to watch my shoulder, and I'll go in. So that's the same thing with the magic happens between the notes.
All right. Well, thank you to all of our listeners. Remember, if you're writing characters, make sure you find the right sources for how they really can be represented correctly through their books. And as you write, remember what we always tell you.
Write selfishly.
If you have a question or comment for our hosts or a topic you'd like us to cover, send us an email at writingroots@aspenhousepublishing.com or find us on Facebook by searching for Aspen House Publishing.
Metaphors have a way of holding the most truth in the least space. Orson Scott Card.
You're listening to Writing Roots, brought to you by Aspen House Publishing.
Welcome to Writing Roots. I'm Lee Hull.
And I'm Lee Esses.
Today we are talking about the use of similes and metaphors in writing. Before we do that, though, we want to remind you that we are doing an NaNoWriMo giveaway, so if you are participating, head to our website. On the very front page, on the right-hand side, you'll find a link to get more information about how to join us and enter to win copies of our books and some Writing Roots merch.
So similes and metaphors are one of those things that I, as an author and as a human being, have kicked and screamed at and stomped my feet and hated basically my entire life. I am a literalist. Anyone who knows me outside of this podcast can tell you that I will always interpret word for word exactly what you mean before I understand anything outside of that. So if he is a dog, I think he's got ears and a tail.
Translates very literally when we're speaking to Lee. Which is funny because I think you use more metaphors in your writing than I do.
A lot of that is because I'm trying to convey physical movement in a way that makes sense and doesn't come across technical. If he's blocking a punch with both hands, swiping across in like a double windmill kind of thing, that doesn't make nearly as much sense as he swiped both of his hands across his vision like windshield wipers. Okay, you've got a clear image of what that looks like.
So that is one of the uses of similes and metaphors. In one line, you can convey an idea in a shorter amount of time than it would take to explain it literally.
So what is a simile? What is a metaphor?
A simile is a direct comparison. You use like or as. An example of a simile: she dipped a cookie in the coffee like a young boy might dip his toe into a lake before his first swim.
She's doing this like someone would do that. That is the key difference between a simile and a metaphor.
Metaphors will do the comparison as if it were real. So his arms were windshield wipers swiping across his vision, instead of his arms were like windshield wipers swiping across his vision.
And of course, this is the one I struggle with, because I'm thinking he now has windshield wipers attached at the elbows. Not literally, but my first image of that moment is this.
And it all depends on your readers. There are very few people out there as literal as Lee. So you're usually good to go with similes, with metaphors, in the right scenarios.
And when you choose to use them, when you choose to apply this particular tool, is very indicative of your writing style. A lot of the authors that I follow, that I enjoy, are very literal. And if Lee Child suddenly started being very flowery in his writing, with lots of similes and metaphors, I would lose my interest in him as an author.
So there are a couple of times when the metaphor is more than just a single line or a single sentence or a single word.
If you are using more than one metaphor in your scene, they should connect in some way. Her blood turned to ice at the sight of the giant. Her blood thawed and then began to boil when the giant stepped on her sister. Maintaining that continuity between metaphors, at least within the same scene, helps understand. If you hop between metaphors, it gets very messy and very difficult to follow what you're doing, and it feels flowery. You're not in that moment.
And then, beyond just the scenes, sometimes the entire book can be a metaphor itself. This is most often seen in your literature kind of stories, your novels that were written as a lesson or later on interpreted as a lesson for mankind.
The first time I really recognized this part about myself was when we were assigned to read Metamorphosis by Kafka, where the guy, as a teenager, as I recall, turns into a beetle. It was like a metaphor for puberty and changing into something weird and new. I'm going, no, the kid turned into a beetle. That's what the book said.
This is also very popular, not just in the English lit genre, but in the softer fiction genres, especially Christian, where you have allegories. One really good example of this is The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe by C.S. Lewis. It's an entire representation of Christian values.
A lot of these types of stories are meant to offer something to the reader, and it's up to the reader to ingest and interpret and therefore participate in the storytelling process, because that's what this means to me. This is a lot more of the artistic writing and less of the entertainment writing. This is also a great tool to relate to your readers in what is an abnormal situation for the characters. So if they're casting a spell, an invisibility spell, I drop it on your head, bloop. Okay, we can kind of visually see that because we've seen that in a bunch of TV shows. But the fairy tapped her on the head and then it felt like an egg had been broken and it was going through her hair as it dripped down over her entire body. Okay, we have a better idea of the speed, of the temperature, of the goo.
It gives us the sensory details of this moment that would be lost otherwise. Metaphors can also be used as a way to define a character. One of my favorite examples is from Brandon Sanderson's Reckoners series. He has a character who is constantly using similes, calling them metaphors, and they are so bad, but it's purposeful, and it is that character. It is so defining for that character.
If you have a character who is speaking in similes and metaphors, then you need to make sure they're basically the only character who does it. Normal people, and I'm not talking about writers, I'm talking about normal people, rarely speak in similes and metaphors.
And people do use metaphors, but they're common metaphors. Like, we'll cross that bridge when we come to it. These are things, we're not literally going to go to a bridge and cross the bridge. We're not literally going to go burn a bridge. But these are common metaphors that we use all of the time. So a lot of what we've been talking about is serious uses for similes and metaphors. similes and metaphors can be very comedic. Like in the Reckoner series, I'm going to read a quote from it because it's amazing. But even a 90-year-old blind priest would stop and stare at this woman. If he weren't blind, that is. Dumb metaphor, I thought. I'll have to work on that one. I have trouble with metaphors. So it's ridiculous, it's fun, but it's in the right place, and he is the only character that does this, that comes up with the most absurd things. So it's defining for him. It's a fun moment for the reader to connect with a character. Because how many times do we come up with saying something and then realize, well, that was dumb, and then try to move on from it? Another way to use metaphors as comedy is to use malaphors. So I mentioned earlier the you burned that bridge, and we'll cross that bridge when you come to it. You can also say, we'll burn that bridge when we come to it. That's a malaphor. It's a mixing of metaphors in a comedic way.
And of course, if you have your laptop in front of you and are just looking for a giggle, looking up metaphors by high school students can be hilarious.
The little boat gently drifted across the pond exactly the way a bowling ball wouldn't.
Murphy fell 12 stories, hitting the pavement like a hefty bag filled with vegetable soup.
It's so visual and maybe appropriate in the right setting, but man, in the wrong setting with the wrong timing, that is a terrible metaphor.
I love it. So learning similes and metaphors is something you have to kind of learn about your own writing style. This is something you'll start to notice as you read more in your genre, what works and what doesn't, and what you like and what you don't like. Is it adding to the scene, or is it just redefining the scene? If you're just redefining, you're wasting time, because it can distract, but it can also add so much. Those undefinable moments, those emotions that we don't have words for, similes and metaphors are great for drawing your reader into that emotion.
That's the goal of any writer. Get the readers emotionally invested in your story, connected. And if everything is super literal, it's hard to get that emotional connection. Or it just takes forever because you're spending so much time trying to explain one motion, one movement, one feeling. You don't want to have that distance. And so consider using similes and metaphors, but make sure it's right for your genre. Make sure it's right for you. And if you're like Lee and you don't think in similes and metaphors, go ahead and stick with being literal. That's fine, because what you should be doing is
writing selfishly.
If you have a question or comment for our hosts or a topic you'd like us to cover, send us an email at writingroots@aspenhousepublishing.com or find us on Facebook by searching for Aspen House Publishing.
Colonoscopy is the most effective method of screening for colon cancer and is the only procedure that can both detect and prevent cancer in one procedure. Take-home tests can miss up to 1 in 12 of colon cancers and most precancerous polyps. If you're 50 or older, now is the time to schedule this life-saving test. When caught early, the survival rate of colon cancer is 90%, so stop making excuses and get screened. This public service message is brought to you by Reading Endoscopy Center. Call them at 530-246-7000 or visit readingendoscopy.com.
It's a dialogue, not a monologue, and some people don't understand that. Social media is more like a telephone than a television.
The news from Town Hall is brought to you on KCNR Shasta Reading by Shasta Regional Medical Center. Your life, your health, your choice. Shasta Regional Medical Center.